The Orioles added a new pitcher, signing Charlie Morton. They can't be done, can they? Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Monday, January 6th. Your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter and Blue Sky at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. And Troy, I want to get to where Jordan Montgomery might move now that Corbin Burnes is in Arizona. I want to get to the Dodgers maybe moving on from Gavin Lux because they signed one of what we expect is two different prominent international free agents this offseason. But first, Charlie Morton, 41-year-old Charlie Morton, signs a one-year, $15 million deal with our favorite team, the Baltimore Orioles. And so the Orioles rotation now is Grayson Rodriguez, Zach Eflin, Charlie Morton, Dean Kramer, and 35-year-old Japanese free agent Tomoyuki Sugano. And at some point in time in the year, we don't know when, but at some point in time, they're expecting to get back Kyle Bradish and Tyler Wells. Tyler Wells had internal brace surgery in June. Kyle Bradish had conventional Tommy John in June of 2024. They've got to do more, right? Like, this is not enough pitching for this team to move the needle in the American League East and actually win a playoff game, right?
No, not at all. And the rest of the American League East has nothing to worry about with their pitching staff. And it's kind of like the Mets in the National League East. Like, they're loaded up on offense, but their pitching is really not all that great. And they're in a division where they're going to need a lot of pitching if they're going to want to stay in the games, even with their really talented offense. And they've kind of been rumored to be kind of somewhat possibly maybe reuniting with Jack Flaherty, but even that's not going to be enough for their rotation. They're going to have to dip into some of that prospect talent that they, whatever prospect talent they do have left or excess of depth, and make a trade, bring in Dylan Cease or somebody like that to just make a splash and actually add someone of note to the rotation.
Yeah. To me, I wonder about Dylan Cease, because they just went through this giving up players and a draft pick to get Corbin Burnes and weren't able to re-sign him. And getting Dylan Cease for 1 year feels like you're just running back that same situation. I would think this might be a situation where you could go out and maybe get Luis Castillo. Because what do you have a lot of? You have a lot of infielders. The Mariners need some combination of first and second and third. And so you could trade. I don't know the exact contract status here, but I think Ryan Mountcastle has two more years of control left. You could trade first baseman Ryan Mountcastle, promote Kobe Mayo to play first base. Hessen Kerstedt could also play some first base as well. So you've got options there. I believe Kerstedt ended up DHing a lot last year. So you've got options at first base. You could then go and you could trade, some of your infield talent. You have Emmanuel Rivera is in your minors. You've got options here, right? Like, you've got guys at these positions. You know, maybe Ramon Urias gets moved. You've got different guys that you can flip. Luis Castillo would give you 3 years of team control. I believe 3 years of team control of a pitcher that is better than anybody left on the market right now. Like, would you rather have Luis Castillo, even the version of him in T-Mobile Park that he is, over Jack Flaherty? Like, would you rather have him over 41-year-old Justin Verlander? So it feels like they're going to have to make a move, a trade. But to me, I feel like another 1 year, like another walk year guy, just means you're going to be in this exact same situation next offseason where you're trying to find more starting pitching.
No, absolutely. That is a very good point. I did see a tweet. It was pretty funny. I wish I knew who tweeted it so I could give them credit, but they said that after Charlie Morton's $15 million deal, they gave another pitcher $10 million last year, and then the year before that, $7 million. So right now they're on pace to give a pitcher a $30 million deal in 2033. So it's they're on the right track, I guess, in 8 years, but it's just I'm with you. They do need to do something that's not a one and done, because we've seen they're not going to give the pitcher the contract that he deserves to stick around with the team. They're not going to spend, and they need to do that. We've already had this discussion, and they need to do that.
Now, to their credit, reportedly they did have an offer for Corbin Burnes. I don't know if the money was more or similar or whatever, but reportedly they did have one. That was the rare situation where they could have gotten a qualifying offer guy without having to give up a draft pick. And they will receive a draft pick for losing Corbin Burnes. So there is that. But I would just much rather – they also gave up a draft pick to get Corbin Burnes. So they're really just replacing the pick that they lost, and they're still out a prospect. This one who's going to end up being probably the starting shortstop for the Brewers next year. So it feels like they have to do something. And I'm worried that you're coming dangerously close to – us starting to talk about, hey, are they going to waste this core? Are they going to waste Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman, who is now hitting arbitration? Like, are they going to, you know, Cedric Mullins, I believe, is in a walk year. Are they going to be in a situation where they're going to start seeing guys that are get way more expensive or walk? And the only real commitment they've given out is Tyler O'Neill, which was kind of surprising because they have so many outfielders already. Like, they didn't want Hess and Kirsten to sit to play every day. They put him on the bench. Maybe the plan all along was to move Ryan Mountcastle, let Kirsten play first. But this feels like we're coming close to the question of, are the Orioles going to waste this core? And for Baltimore fans, I wish that wasn't the case. I hope that's not the case.
Yeah, absolutely. You never want to see a team waste their core, especially a core as exciting as the Orioles. I mean, for years and years, that's all anybody talked about was the Orioles are coming. That farm system's coming. They're going to be in the major soon. And every single one of them hit. And it's just, you don't get that often. And so it's just, as just a baseball fan in general, it's not something that you want to see for any team, even your most hated rival.
Although what is fun to me, just kind of glancing real quick at how Fangraphs has everything listed on their roster resource thing, 12, between the starting lineup, the bench, and the rotation, there are 12 guys that were picked in the first three rounds of the MLB draft, including two different number one overall picks in Jackson Holliday and Adley Rutschman, and a number two overall pick in Hess and Kirsten. I just think it's really funny how there's like so many high pedigree. Like, this is what tanking did for you. This is what the rebuild was about. You got a bunch of high picks. You use them on mostly on position players. They did. Grayson Rodriguez was a first rounder in 2018, but it was mostly on position players. And now you have them up and you have to supplement that core. And they haven't done that well enough yet when it comes to their pitching staff. A team that has supplemented every single position on the diamond, it feels like. Los Angeles Dodgers signed Korean baseball infielder Hyesung Kim to a three-year deal, $12.5 million, has a two-year club option for 2028 and 2029. I believe that would give him an additional $9.5 million. The 40-man move for this was former top prospect Diego Cartaya, the catcher designated for assignment. That was kind of surprising from the perspective of just a few years ago, he was one of the top players and top prospects in all of baseball, but he forgot how to hit. With Kim, it really feels like Kim is, as of now, kind of going to be a utility piece. He's played multiple different positions in Korea. He's a guy, like the last six seasons, he's been with Kai Woom, who got a small release fee, like $2.5 million from the Dodgers. But he hit 309, 32 home runs, and for six seasons. But he also stole at least 20 bases every year, career high of 46, and won four gold gloves, three at second base and one at shortstop. Do we think that he starts the year at second base and Gavin Lux gets moved? Or do you think they're going to wait and see how he acclimates to the majors before they make their decision on what to do with Gavin Lux at second base?
I think if they want to get the biggest return possible, they need to move Gavin Lux before the season starts. If that is indeed their intention, once Hyesung Kim does get acclimated.
If nothing else, just because Gavin Lux is apparently prone to tearing an ACL in spring training, that happened. That happened in spring training because everybody was making jokes about how dare the WBC take another victim. He didn't play the WBC, but the thing here, I can't remember a team that took a weakness and made it into a strength so quickly. If you remember, like the whole reason Mookie Betts got moved to shortstop last spring was because Gavin Lux was so bad and they had no other shortstops to play. You know, Chris Taylor is 34 years old. He can't do it anymore. He can barely hit his weight right now. And so they moved Mookie there. But then they go out, they get Miguel Rojas, who'll be back at age 36 season next year. They go out and they get Tommy Edman. He can play both center field and shortstop. He is slated to be their starting center fielder. Mookie is going to spend the whole offseason getting ready for short and then play short. And now they have Hyesung Kim, who, while mostly being a second baseman, has played shortstop. I can't think of another team that took a weakness and made it into arguably a strength as quickly as the Los Angeles Dodgers did in the span of less than one calendar year.
Yeah, absolutely. They have completely turned that position around and just have they're spoiled for choice, as Gordon Ramsay would say, on who's going to play shortstop right now. And really, they can't go wrong with any of them outside of defensively here and there.
Yeah, it feels like there's a couple different options that they have. I agree with you that Gavin Lux needs to get moved sooner rather than later, simply because you kind of need the clarity. I think, like, if you, again, we're going to use Roster Resource on Fangraphs for this. They have Andy Pahez as starting off in AAA, which I have Andy Pahez in fantasy, so I hate that. In Dynasty Baseball, but you could move Lux and then give a bench spot to Pahez, and it gives you the ability, if Mookie's good at center, good at short, you can do Mookie at short, and Kim can play second, or Rojas can play second, Max Muncy can play. You got a lot of options there. And then if Mookie's not working at shortstop, you can put Edman at shortstop, put Mookie at second, and play Pahez in center. Like, there's so many options on what you can do here, and it really feels like the best thing to do is to move Gavin Lux. If he does move, you think he's going to end up being a New York Yankee, since they have these questions about both second and third, and they've got to find somebody to fill one of those so that Jazz Chisholm can do the other?
Yeah, I think so. I really don't think that there's another team that's willing to make that move that needs a second baseman as much as the New York Yankees. And they've shown this offseason that they're willing to do what it takes to bring in guys and improve their roster in at any position. They've done it. They've been one of the more active teams this offseason. So yeah, if Gavin Lux is moved, I think it's going to be to the Yankees.
Yeah. And I think the situation you're in now is the bench, like third base in the bench right now is Oswaldo Cabrera, Oswald Peraza, DJ LeMahieu. None of those options really give you a ton of confidence. I like Cabrera the most out of the three of those, but he's better as a super utility who can play a bunch of different places. I think 23 was the year where, like, he tied for the team lead in outfield assists despite playing like 40 games out there. If you're able to get Lux, because of his arm, Lux has to play second. He can't play third, but you can then put Jazz at third. His arm's good enough for both. And that gives you the ability to either go ahead and just eat the money on LeMahieu. Boone talked him up a little bit this offseason. I don't really know what that's about. He's 36 years old. He's not that same guy, not that batting title guy. He batted 204 last year. But you can either move Peraza back to the minors. He's out of options. You probably have to DFA him if you do it. Put Cabrera back on the bench. Get rid of LeMahieu, something like that. And it feels like your defense is significantly better. I know Lux isn't the best second baseman in the league from a defensive perspective, but you had some stats before we started recording. Offensively, he was really good down the stretch, kind of overlooked a little bit on that team with Shohei doing all of his stuff, but Lux was really good down the stretch, wasn't he?
Yeah, from July 1st onwards, he had an OPS of 839 from July 1st onwards. And then over the second half of the season, he had a 152 WRC plus, which was the best among all second basemen and 13th overall in baseball. So he
I don't think I realized he was that good.
Exactly. Nobody realized he was that good. He's on a team with Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman. Like, he's going to be that good.
Hey, Oscar Hernandez. And you just keep going. You can just keep going with names. Like, there's so many. Will Smith. And there's so many dudes that were so good on there. And Gavin Lux did really well. And is it worth just keeping Gavin Lux and saying, hey, we have more guys than we need, but that's a good problem to have? Or do you capitalize? Like, if you move Gavin Lux, what are you trying to get in return? Are you trying to get a starting pitcher prospect? Are you like, what do the Dodgers need right now from a roster perspective? Are you just, what can we get as far as lower level non 40 man prospects? Like when you moved Michael Bush to the Cubs and you got Jackson Ferris and Zaire Hope, two young prospects that weren't on the 40 man and won't be for a couple years. Is that the avenue here? You just move it, go grab a dude that you could eventually turn into a starting pitcher in three seasons? Or what do you even ask for Gavin Lux?
Yeah, that's, I mean, the Dodgers definitely need some more pitching prospects. Their offense is pretty set for many, many years to come with all of their guys pretty much under contract for the next better part of a decade. And it looks like unless Gavin Lux is a Super 2 next year, that he will have 2 years of eligibility left. So, I mean, their return would be pretty solid for what he's done offensively, especially, like we said, over the second half of the year, he finally found his footing after missing all of 2023. It's always good to have depth, and I think that the Dodgers would be better off over the next 2 years if they did keep Gavin Lux. But in the long run, I think that they need to move him and try to build up that farm system a little bit, especially in the pitching department.
Yeah, they have to find, like, it's a good system, but they've got to find more starting pitcher options, right? They've got five guys that project to start AAA on the 40-man roster. Bobby Miller was awful. I don't know what happened there. Worst ERA in baseball, right? But, like, Landon Knack, Nick Frosso, Justin Robleski, Ben Kasperius, and then some guys that could make it up, you know, that are in their lower 20. I feel like that's the next level, that double-A level. Doesn't really have a lot of prominent prospects unless you're a believer in like Peter Hubeck and stuff. I feel like you get to the low minors, you've got, you know, Maddox Bruns and high A and things like that, but your double A level is kind of the level you'd be promoting the guys to triple A and to the majors. That's where you're kind of missing. So maybe going to find a guy that's a year or two away from the rule from 40 man eligibility would be the right move there. Talking about trades, there's an interesting article dropped on Sunday night about Jordan Montgomery's possible fits in a trade. And credit to MLB Trade Rumors, they dropped a really good idea that I hadn't thought about. We know the contract for Jordan Montgomery, 1 year, $22.5 million. And I've been banging the drum. He needs to go to Atlanta because that's kind of their thing. They like going out. Like, it'd be the second straight offseason of going and trading for a lefty starter who had a bad previous year. Who's on a one-year deal and turn him into a great dude, right? Like they got Chris Sale last year. Let's try it again. But MLB Trade Rumors pointed out the Oakland A's and Chicago White Sox could both acquire him and not ask Arizona to pitch to cover any of the money. Oakland arguably needs to get more money, like more luxury tax payroll, so that they can not have agreements coming their way from the Players Association. They're targeting $105 million of total luxury tax payroll. So their revenue sharing, they don't get accused of not spending enough revenue sharing on players. And the White Sox, their payroll was like $78 million. They could take that entire amount on and could actually tell Arizona, like, hey, give us a prospect for Jordan Montgomery, and if he figures it out, they could just flip him at the deadline, which would make a ton of sense, obviously. Does it feel like a contender is going to go get Jordan Montgomery, or does it feel like at the end of the day, this money is going to be the determining factor, and the Athletics or the White Sox are going to end up swooping in and taking the entire contract?
It's funny you called them Oakland, because while you were leading into that, I was trying to pull up their projected roster on FanGraphs, and I was like, where is Oakland? But they're listed
as ATH. Yeah.
But
it's ATH now. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, let's not sleep on the ATHs over there in wherever they are playing, because they
Sacramento.
They have quietly, I mean, they've got a good offense. We saw that in 2024. They had a
Lawrence solid Butler offense. Was fantastic down the stretch. Lawrence I really like the young hitting talent they've got with Lawrence Butler, Zach Gelof, Tyler Soderstrom, Shea Bangaliers. Instead of, you know, like I like the young hitters they have. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good. And you know Shea Langeliers pretty well too. But they've also upgraded their pitching rotation. They have Luis Severino, Jeffrey Springs,
JP Sears and Mitch Spence, right?
Yeah, and Joey Estes. Another Atlanta guy.
Former Brave.
but let's not sleep on them getting Jordan Montgomery and maybe fixing him and maybe having a better season out of him. It would not surprise me at all, because it seems like they're trying to be contenders in the American League West, where the Houston Astros have taken a step back, and that division's kind of up for grabs for everybody. But I mean, even the Angels are trying to contend. I don't think they will, but they're trying to. So that division's really up for grabs now. So don't sleep on the Athletics.
Yeah. Jordan Montgomery was really good in his career up until last year. And I think the three previous years, what was it? His ERA was like 3.48 over his past three seasons and like 90 something starts. He won a World Series in 23 with the Rangers. And I believe he's actually mentioned that signing so late in spring is part of the reason he was so bad. He just never really, he tried to accelerate his ramp up. It didn't work out well. And he struggled and just never really figured it out. And so I'm a believer that Jordan Montgomery can rebound. That's part of the reason I want him to go to Atlanta, right? They need one more starter that you arguably could use in the postseason. Speaking of, if you're watching this and you want to hear me talk more about that, today's Braves Today podcast is all about Charlie Morton leaving and Atlanta needing to go out and trade for Jordan Montgomery. So go check that out wherever you get your podcasts. But he feels like he's the most, I'm not going to say gettable, but he's the most accessible starter left on the trade market. Everybody else, you either have to pay significantly more, like Dylan Cease, or you're making a much longer commitment, like a Luis Castillo, like a Pablo Lopez, and things like that. So, yeah, like Jordan Montgomery is almost a lock to move. One, because the owner stuck his foot in his mouth on the whole thing. But two, I mean, now they've got like six starters to start the year between Burns, Gallen, Merrill Kelly, Eduardo Rodriguez, Brandon Pfaadt, Ryan Nelson, and then Jordan Montgomery still there. So, yeah, he's going to move. And I still think a contender is going to be the one who makes the winning deal. I do think, if nothing else, adding the Athletics and the White Sox into the mix is just going to mean they're going to have to take on more money, right? Like they're going to have to, whoever does get him is going to have to give up more and take on more of the money to do it than before the Athletics and White Sox entered the picture. But I still think, Atlanta's probably still the favorite to go out and trade for him, simply because it makes obviously tons of sense for the Braves. This is their thing that they like to do, and I swear we've been hearing this now for 3 weeks that the Braves are going to go get Jordan Montgomery. It just makes too much sense to not happen to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I could definitely see him going to the Braves. Like I've said multiple times, the Braves are one of those three teams that are in the upper echelon of pitching factories where guys could go there, even if especially guys that were good before and had a down season where their team verbally gave up on them to the world. And they can go to Atlanta and find things again and be a Cy Young winner. And it's Atlanta's a good fit for Jordan Montgomery. And for the White, as far as the White Sox go, I like that too, just because they got to have somebody to eat those innings. They've got 162 games to play. They got to figure out something to do. So,
I mean, he'd probably be the opening day starter. And again, like there is no such thing as a bad 1 year deal, but especially if you are not contending, there is. And I feel like I scream this every offseason and nobody ever really, really focuses on it and says they're focusing on this. But there's no reason that teams that are not contending should not be going out and signing three or four veterans to be back-end starters in your bullpen and all that kind of stuff. Like, especially the bullpen guys, because what does everybody need at the deadline but relievers? Go sign a couple veterans on one-year deals, flip them all at the deadline, and let your young kids come up and close out the season while you enjoy all these new prospects that you've gotten from these trades. So it just, it makes too much sense to not happen. And I don't know why he hasn't been dealt yet. I'm guessing they had to wait for Corbin Burns to figure his stuff out. But despite that, there you go. But before we go, something that was not on the rundown, I'm kind of surprising you with here today. Apologies for that. Top of your head, who signs a longer deal, Alex Bregman or Pete Alonso?
Ooh.
Longer deal, more years.
I am going to say Alex Bregman. And my reasoning for that is because he brings more to the table than just home runs. He can play defense, and when he does get closer to the end of that contract, he can shift over to first and be a gold glove first baseman with his gold glove third baseman skills.
There you go. From Memorial Day weekend on, he batted .279 with a .139 WRC plus. I think it's also Bregman. I think, and we talked about this maybe last week, I think major league teams have started to realize about the risk of signing bad defensive first basemen to long-term deals into their 30s. I think that Pete's going to get something like 2 or 3. I think he's going to end up taking the Boris special, right? He's going to get like 2 or 3 years, but he'll have opt-outs after every year. Maybe if he goes out and crushes 50 homers next year, he opts out and tries again in free agency. But I think Bregman's going to get one for longer. Who do you think is going to get more money, Alex Bregman or Anthony Santander?
Anthony Santander is 28. I think I was going to say, I think he's going to get the longer deal, but he's, I don't think that's the case anymore, but I think he might get the more guaranteed money even with a shorter deal just because he's 28.
Yeah. I thought he was 30.
Is he 30?
I thought he was 30.
I'm looking it up.
I thought he was 30, but either way, it's something where I think he's going to end up, if he finds the right fit, the team that's willing to be like, yeah, we're going to get him in the outfield and then we're going to throw him into DH role after a year or two, I think he could get more money. But I still think it's Bregman. I think when you come down to the end of the day and you look at what other skills other than the main thing that they do, what other skills do these guys have? Bregman just has more to offer. I think probably Santander or Pete is probably the better question, but either way, my camera just died, which is really fun. I don't quite know what happened there. Randomly in the middle of recording, my camera died. So that's fun. Enjoy the little picture of me talking there in a little circle.
I did look up his age. I confused him and Teoscar Hernandez. Santander is 30. So I am going to agree with you because they're both the same age. I'm going to say Alex Bregman gets the more money also.
Well, there you go. This has been First Pitch for Monday, January 6th. You're listening on audio. Do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell so you know when we drop the next episode. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.